Shankya is 23 evolutes of Prakriti. Though Prakriti is unconscious material substance, it seems to be conscious and realizes itself as conscious because of the presence of the conscious self. It's unconscious, but somehow or another it seems to like that. Mahat is the state in which Prakriti receives light from Purusha, the fountain of light, and sees itself. And this process of seeing is the beginning of the manifestation of the universe. Right? What we'll notice in here is the difficulty is this: they don't really make that much distinction between Purusha being the jiva and the attributes of the Supreme. Right? So many of it means, though the living entity is a small portion of the Supreme, the problem is they don't make enough difference because, in other words, they know things are going on beyond that seem beyond our position, but they still attribute it to. You know, so you can see here is then there's that little bit of difficulty is that because they don't bring out the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then some of the elements then they attribute there. So it's not that these things aren't going on, but Prakriti meaning it's unconscious, the matter itself, the elements, but it's not that the material energy herself is unconscious. This is, they are not able to understand. So here we see is they're doing both the thing is unconscious and at the same time in contact with the Purusha's conscious. Like that. But the point is that the material energy is always in contact with the Purusha. Right? It's always in contact with the Purusha. So there's not a state where she's not there. It's just a matter of whether we're manifesting the gross manifestations or not. But she as a person always exists. Right? Because if the person, if you have the original and there's light, then you'll always have a shadow. So the shadow is always present. Right? Because the internal potency is always connected to the Supreme Lord. So that means he is light. So that means then he'll always be present. She'll always be present. And as long as when she's present and he's present, then that means there'll be a shadow behind her. So it means Maya's always there. But now it's just a matter of manifestation in the forms that we know. So that's all the part where she's manifesting according to the interests and desire of the living entity. But at the same time, is what's also missed here, it's still on the formulas given by the Supreme Lord. Right? It won't be, does that make sense? So, in other words, they're bringing out elements, but they don't distinguish enough between them, so they appear as one. The two distinct aspects of the same process. But because of the same process that we see here in Shankya, they link them together. They don't actually separate them. So this Shankya will not be as developed as Kapila, the son of Devahuti's Shankya, because his accepting the Supreme Lord, seeing that he is himself the Supreme Lord, then it will make more distinction there. So we'll get the fine details that you'll get a description in the Bhagavatam that you won't get here. Though they'll be very, very technical and they'll give all their reasons and all that, which are very useful for us. But at the same time, it's still not making that distinction, then there's a problem there in that it's not clear. So they can very easily think everything's going on very nice and it's all about them and miss the whole point that it's not about them, it's about the Supreme Lord. Like that. The Mahat is the state in which Prakriti receives light from Purusha. But that's been the glance of Mahavishnu, but he doesn't even come into this picture. Right? The fountainhead of light and sees itself. And this process of seeing is the beginning of the manifestation of the universe. The individual counterpart of this cosmic state, Mahat, is called Buddhi, the intellect. The finest aspect of a human being that has the capacity to know the entire personality in full purity. Buddhi is the immediate effect of Prakriti resulting from the guidance of Purusha. Therefore, Buddhi is the evolute closest to Purusha. Right? Prabhupada also says this, the intelligence is the closest thing to the Supersoul. Right? So we see here that this whole process is going on. The Lord has entered, so he's there. The living entities are there, and then we see this whole process is there. So this buddhi is therefore very important. So buddhi yoga would mean that all the various aspects of the creation can be connected back to this principle. of its connection with the Lord. Through intelligence, you can connect it back to the Lord. Right? Because this is the spot at which then now everything will diverge. All the different elements will manifest. The living entities will go on their various paths and everything. But it's all come from this point. Yes?
Mind, intelligence, and the soul.
So then
mind, intelligence, and? The soul. That's how the...
Soul?
Individual soul.
Mind, intelligence, and soul.
In terms of gradation.
Gradation.
It says it's the gross body, then mind, intelligence, and soul. So you're saying the super soul is nearer to the intelligence.
Then?
Is that how it is?
Yes, means the point is that the intelligence is what's closest, because the mind then can be the closest, but the problem is in the conditioned state it's not. It's far away. But the intelligence is there, because intelligence, the ability to discriminate and see things, that's very easy. It's the mind that will cloud things and make it so that it's not appreciated. That's the point. So, you understand? Point is by that, through the intelligence, and one can understand the Lord, of course, by His grace. Point is He enters the intelligence like that. So that one understands, and when he appreciates the Lord as a person, then he can enter the mind, because the mind is the place of relationship. But to understand position and everything like that, how things are, that's the intelligence. Right? So that's why the intelligence on that way is considered higher. But at the same time, as when we're dealing with highness, we're dealing with, you know, the gross material elements, the Mahabhuta, that's the lowest. Then higher than that's the mind, then the intelligence, then the ego. Right? But we see is that in this, that's the stages, what they are, the finer and finer, you know, coverings. But the element actually is there that they're paired up. So the Mahabhuta is with the false ego, because both of those are created from ignorance. So they are together as, you know, I could say in one sense, the next covering of the soul, right? So, I mean, the outside covering of the soul. So the gross body and your identification with that, right? So the first five and the eighth, those are combined together, right? And that's one covering. Then the next is that of the intelligence and the senses, right? Because they work together. So that's the next one. Then in the middle is the mind. You see? So on one side you have the senses and the gross material energy, senses, sense objects, everything like that. The other side you have the intelligence and the false ego. But in the center is the mind. So when the mind is absorbed in the material, then things don't go so well. When the mind's absorbed in the spiritual, then that brings one to the transcendental place. Because otherwise, by intelligence, one can understand so many things. But until the mind accepts it, you don't change what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? And so then that final, the outermost covering of false ego then is the Purusha Bhava. I am the controller and enjoyer. So that way, there's four aspects of ego. This doesn't come out so much here. The Bhagavatam then talks about it. Is that I think Second Canto got into it, but the gross body and the identification with it, that's one kind. Then the senses and intelligence is another. Then that accepting and rejecting of the mind, all the things that are important, that's the third. And then the Purusha Bhava is the fourth. Right, so all this is false ego. Right? At the same time, it's all mind. Because it's false ego in that it's your identity, but it's the mind has accepted these things. Right? So that's why everything is all nicely connected together. Like that. Does this make sense? Yeah? Buddhi is manifested from the sattvic aspect of prakriti, because the nature of sattva, weightlessness, clarity and light, is affected sooner by the active force of manifestation than would be the heavy and unclear nature of tamas. Another, so the saying is that because Prakriti has the three forms of sattva, rajas, and tamas. So sattva is very light and everything. Light, clarity, weightiness, so it'll be very soon affected by this intelligence, all this aspect of the combination of the intelligence and that, so then it manifests very quickly. Right? That consciousness of the Purusha in contact with Prakriti, that beginning of the interaction is going to affect the mode of goodness first. Like that. And so they're putting it here, so that therefore creates this buddhi. So this means buddhi, meaning working on that platform. Because in the gross manifestation, the buddhi is coming from, in secondary manifestation, it's, or even in the primary, it's actually coming out of passion. Because of the sattvic quality of buddhi, the light of the self reflects in the intellect similarly to the way an external object reflects in the clear surface of a mirror. The self, seeing its reflection in the mirror of buddhi, identifies itself with the reflected image and forgets its true nature. Thus, the feeling of I-ness is transmitted to buddhi. In this way, the unconscious buddhi starts functioning as a conscious principle. Right? So, in other words, it's the material energies, the consciousness that's there, then is actually the consciousness of the living entity reflected on the material energy that he identifies with. Like you see your body, the body's dead matter. But because seeing the body in the mirror, then you think this is me. And so therefore, then the body takes on, you know, all the qualities that we would attribute to the self. Does this make sense? You know, it's a subtle point. So we can see in all these things, this is what's going on, but at the same time, there's nothing actually real there. Does that make sense? So we have to be able to distinguish between material energy, the living entity, and Godhead, and the actual clear understanding, which is proper intelligence, and illusory perception, you know, of things that actually aren't there. Like, we're not the body exists, but we're not the body. So that we think we're the body, that's illusion. Not that the body itself is illusion. Because remember, this also does not follow Vivartavad, where it's thought of as, it's not actually there, it's an illusion, it's Parinamavad, so it actually is there, it's just transformed. So what's happening, Prakriti is transforming here. Right. According to the Shankya system, buddhi possesses the following eight qualities: virtue, dharma, knowledge, jnana, detachment, vairagya, excellence, aishvarya, non-virtue, adharma, ignorance, ajnana, attachment, avairagya, and imperfection or incompetency, anaishvarya. Notice it's interesting that aishvarya, excellence, aishvarya is also opulence. So if one is imperfect or incompetent, he doesn't get any aishvarya, he doesn't get any opulence. So opulence comes from competence. Right? So things like that kind of stuff is what you make connections with. You make connections with that kind of thing. Because then you can see from the six qualities of the Lord. The ones connected with Shankarshan, Prajumnadi, and Vasudev. The Kalyana Gunas. Two with each of the deities and all six of them with Vasudev. So in there, then you have, you know, Jnana and Bala is with Shankarshan. And I think this Aishvarya and Virya is with Prajumna. So Aishvarya means Prajumna is attraction. What is our attraction to this world? That desire, that interest, that excitement. So there is then Virya means that, you know, strength and willing to go out and do something. Just that, you know, it's not that you're necessarily doing it, but that capacity to do, that interest to do. And then Aishvarya is opulence. So, but that means then that goes with it is that Virya is competent. Does that make sense? It's not incompetence. So that means somebody can't have attitude and be incompetent. That's why nothing happens. Right? So that would be the problem one would see. Huh, yeah. Does that make sense? So these things have connection to each other, all these qualities. The first four are septic forms of buddhi, while the last four are overpowered by inertia, tamas. All his attributes except knowledge bind prakriti and involve the self in buddhi, thereby entangling it in worldly concerns and miseries. The pure self falsely identifies with buddhi, and therefore thinks it is experiencing what buddhi is experiencing. But through the use of the buddhi's eighth attribute, knowledge, it reflects pure and well-filtered knowledge onto Purusha from its mirror, and Purusha comes to realize its false identification with buddhi's objects, and to recognize its transcendental nature in all its purity. Thus buddhi, the discriminating or decision-making function, stands nearest to the self and functions directly for the self, enabling it to discriminate between itself and prakriti, and thereby achieve realization of its liberated state. Notice here is explained that the mind is actually the major principle, and the intelligence and ego are subsections of it. You know, it's such that they're made as separate entities, but at the same time it's all just parts of the mind. Because here it's just explained the buddhi, but this is beyond how we would describe buddhi. Because it's saying that, one, it can identify it, but it says it's the decision-making. Because the decision-making function is solely that of the mind. So what they're taking here is that the mind combined with the intelligence, that aspect, so that in that way then it comes out of passion, I mean out of goodness. But if it's not applied actually to proper things, then that it becomes overwhelmed by illusion, so therefore the ignorance aspect comes out. Right. But you get the But to be able to move between the two, that means also a passion must be there. So there's no pure modes, is in other words what's there. Only Shuddha Sattva is pure. Like that. So that's only found in devotional service. Ahankara, the sense of I. Ahankara is a derivative of Mahat or Buddhi. It is the mundane property of individualization that generates a material boundary of I-ness. This false sense of identity separates oneself from all others and focuses it upon matter. You see what's looming on the horizon here? So this ahankar, it separates oneself from all others and focuses it upon matter. Right? So if you drop the ego, what happens? According to this definition. Right? Then you merge. You're no longer separated from other living entities. Right? So you can see this is their process. So this is where it takes on its mundane attributes. Up to now it's fine, but now we start to see it's actually coming from mundane intelligence. So mundane intelligence, though very great intelligence, has been applied upon the Vedic literatures and putting together the various verses that they'll be using as their evidence, then has established this philosophy. Because otherwise, then, as soon as you have that there's no differentiation, then you know it's mundane. It's that simple. If there is no differentiation, but simultaneously there is, then you understand you're dealing with transcendental. Right? In other words, everything is Brahman, so it's all transcendental, but within transcendental there's variety. So as long as you say it's transcendental, so there's therefore no variety, that's a mundane concept. It's not spiritual at all. It's dealing with spiritual, but it's a misidentification of spiritual. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's very important, I guess.
Could you elaborate on that a little? Just explain, why you could not be spiritual?
Because spiritual is unlimited eternal variety, right? The individuality of everyone is distinct and eternal. So as soon as individuality is lost, and therefore everything is just one, then it has to be mundane, because only that concept is here, because prakriti, at one point, all the variety of manifestations all merge back together, and it becomes pradhan, right? Which is no distinctions. Does that make sense? Like that. So it comes from that aspect. And then at that time, the living entities are absorbed in Mahavishnu, though they still remain as individuals, but they don't remember their place, right? They don't understand. So at the time when they're in Mahavishnu, there is no awareness of that. But as soon as they come out, then they say that that was nice. Right? So therefore you get the concept of that merging is a nice thing. You understand? Like when you sleep, you're not aware of the sleep. But when you wake up, then you can say, that was nice sleep. Does that make sense? So in the same way as when the living entity, when Mahavishnu sleeps, when they're merged back into him, though maintaining the individuality, and they're sleeping, they won't notice what's going on. But as soon as then they again come out, when he breathes out and they again are manifest, then they can reflect upon that time of sleep and say, that was good. Yes.
Is that reflection of thinking back a result of feeling the pleasure of absence of distress? Basically.
But it's also just you're close to the Lord. But they don't know that's what it is. Just like Manu mentions that when you sleep at night, when you have deep sleep that is dreamless, you're actually, the soul is in contact with the Supreme Lord, with the Super Soul. You're there. That's why that kind of rest is considered restful. Right? Because you're in contact with the Lord, so then you become recharged. But if you're dreaming or this, then you're not in contact. So you're still in contact with the mind. So it hasn't gone completely to the just point of experience. And the mind, therefore, puts together whatever happens of the day into all kinds of interesting things. And so, you know, you don't get such good rest. You know, the body may be rested to some degree, but your mind is not rested. You don't feel rested. You understand? There'll be something for the body, but the mind doesn't feel satisfied. So, in other words, this element of sleeping and this ignorance, that's why actually this concept is based on ignorance. Their concept of themselves is wrong. That's based in ignorance. Wanting to be the controller, that's based from ignorance. Like that. This merging then basically means being, you know, asleep in the Lord, which is ignorance. You know what I'm saying? Not that the soul in that state is, but saying the whole thing is based on just being, you know, not being conscious. Does that make sense? That's why it's a consistent philosophy, even though it seems like such different points that have nothing to do with each other. Right? They all worship Lord Shiva. Right? So all these different things are there because they all are connected with the mode of ignorance. Right? The sannyasis are at the top of the pile. They have real big attitude. So it all goes together. You understand? It's all like one kind of mentality. Okay. There are three categories of ahankara. This false sense of identity separates oneself from all others and focuses upon matter. Leading a person to think, I am this body, this is mine, this is for me. There are three categories of ahankara, sattvika, rajas, rajasa, and tamasa, determined by which of the three gunas is prominent in ahankara. 11 senses arise from the sattvika ahankara. The 5 senses of perception, hearing, touch, seeing, tasting, and smelling. The 5 senses of action, verbalization, apprehension, locomotion, excretion, and procreation. And the mind, manas. The 5 tanmatras are subtle elements, sound, touch, color, taste, and smell, are derived from the tamasa ahankara. The function of the rajasa ahankara is to motivate the other two gunas. And thus it is the cause of both aspects of creation, the 11 senses and the 5 tanmatras. So we mentioned before, it's the one that puts it together. So the buddhi has these two aspects of the sattva and the tamas. But the Rajas is then what puts everything together and makes everything happen. Like that. So here, this is also talking about the same thing, but I don't remember the names of it. But here he's saying the Sattvic Rajasic, Sattvika, Rajasa, and Tamasa, kinds of Ahankar. So one is called Taijasa, like that. So they have their, they'll be the, you know, similar kind of connection, like that. Okay, this explanation of the manifestation of Ahankar is based on the Shankhya Karika, the major text of Shankhya philosophy. See table 3. If you have table 3 and you have, you know how you say, a magnifying glass, then you'll be able to appreciate it. Like that. So you have the Purusha, you have the Prakriti. When that is combined or in contact, then you get the Mahat or Buddhi. And then from that comes the Ahankar. So it's important that understand everything is coming from Ahankar, because it's all based on this false identification. Because before the Ahankar, the living entity is actually technically liberated, even though they're within the material sphere and they're meant to be here because of their Purusha Bhava of I am the controller and enjoyer. Still, they're in the liberated state. So that's the point why the liberated state is not eternal unless you've come to the platform of prema. Right? Because then there's some other concept. You're either servant or you're master. Right? You can't stay in a neutral state. So the jiva either decides I am a servant of God, or they think I am God. So then their whole existence in the material sphere is based on false ego. So that's one of the reasons that the Lord in the material world, one of his names is called Tamasi. Right? Because he deals with all this ignorance. When the Lord glances, his glance, which is non-different from himself, but that the flavor of that is Sadashiva. So that carries that potential, that ignorance potential to it. Right? Because it's dealing with the existence. So the very existence of the living entity is that of thinking I am not the servant of the Lord. So that's ignorance. Does that make sense? That's why then the principle of eternality in the material spiritual world, or the Sandini potency, or Sat potency, then here becomes ignorance, right? Mode of ignorance. That's the base, because the mode of ignorance is the basis of your existence here, right? So then this means this Ahankar is coming out of mundane, that intelligence, right? That ability to, you know, that to distinguish and then create, you know, that you distinguish, so that's me. Right? Just like it's I think from there in the animal kingdom, very few animals can tell that the reflection in the mirror is themselves. Like that. Humans generally can. Generally humans think they are the reflection in the mirror, not that they are the, you know, they, but I think porpoises, a few other animals can tell. Most of them think it's another animal, so they start fighting with it. Right? Porpoises are one of the only ones you put up a mirror and they look at it and check it out and see how nice they look and stuff like that. So that means that ability to be able to tell who you are, in reflection, distinguish yourself from others, is actually is intelligence. Right? Because intelligence distinguishes. Right? So then this Ahankar, then you identify with that. So that means as soon as you identify with it, you go, oh, that's me. You did that by intelligence, but that state of mind created it as Ahankar. Everything else comes out of Ahankar. So then you're going to have a Sattvic, Rajasic, and Tamasic form of that, right? And we also said is that the Buddhi will also, it has the same forms that will come down. In other words, it will be manifested through the false ego. So then you're going to get out of the Sattvic form of Ahankar, you're going to get the mind, the knowledge acquiring senses, and the karmendriyas, the, what are they called? Active senses, right? Those will all come out of the mode of goodness, no, here. Then Tamas will give out bhava, or tattva, the five gross elements and the tanmatras, what's connected there. So you can see here there's a slight fine difference in how we're going to explain it. Because here we will bring these things also. They may be in connection with ahankara where they are, but when they actually manifest, then the senses in that are going to come out of passion because they'll be connected with the intelligence. So, in other words, their list here is as much as you need to know to apply their philosophy so that you can undo your absorption in the material world and merge back into, in this case, who knows what. They haven't explained yet. Like that. Does that make sense? So depending upon what you're establishing, you will have that much philosophy. You know what I'm saying? There may be 10 items, but for your philosophy, you only need 3 of them. So your whole philosophy will go around 3. Since everything is connected from that 3, you can go back into the other 7. But to say that those are the main points or the source of them or that would be a misunderstanding. Like that. Does that make sense? So, because there is a natural hierarchy. But at the same time, this other way also works. But it depends upon what you want. So since all they want to do is merge, therefore then this more simple form works. But if you're going back to Godhead, then, there's finer points there because they don't get rid of the Purusha Bhav, that I am the controller and enjoyer. They're not trying to get rid of that. So we have to get rid of that. That means we have to have finer understanding of this. So our distinction must be more clear. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, that's Purusha Bhava. Purusha Bhava just means contaminated consciousness. Because what's the contamination is I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's the contamination. Otherwise, then, what's going to contaminate the soul? So it's only the consciousness. Then from there, then we see the effect of this, and then we identify with it. And then from there, then the ego takes over, and all the gross manifestation is there, and then we interact with that. Right? And if we use the higher side of the sattvic side of the intelligence, then we get all nice things. If we don't use the sattvic side of the intelligence, then we get all not so nice things. Like that. The commentators of this text hold various views. Some state that the mind is the only sense derived from the sattvika ahankar, that the other 10 senses are derived from the rajasa ahankar, and that the 5 subtle elements are derived from the tamasa ahankar. Irrespective of the origin of the senses, all the scholars view the nostrils, tongue, eyes, skin, and ears as the physical organs that are the sheaths of the cognitive senses. Right? So in other words, even amongst themselves, there is speculation about it because they're not including the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so they can't see the higher principles at work. So there's going to be some confusion there naturally. So then some analyze it this way, some analyze it that way. We see in the lower levels that there's no argument. No one's arguing with Nyaya that this is the system of logic. No one's arguing with that. So there's no real differences of opinion like that. In Vaisheshika also, there's no real difference of opinion. Very simple. If you can't break it down any further, it's an atom. If you can break it down, then it's a material manifestation. Like that, based on the karma of the living entity. So, if you stop getting involved in karma, then there'll be no more manifestations of the atoms, then everything's very peaceful. So there's no very school. But in here, because they're getting into analyzing everything much more carefully within the creation, then there's going to be differences of opinion here. Right? But they all agree that the senses that you have, they're the gross forms of the actual subtle portion of the sense. Right, the sense of smell, to be able to smell what's doing the smell is not just this, the nose, the gross. The concept is already there beforehand. So that they'll all agree to. So whatever the form, it can be pulled back into that. What's important in these philosophies, or actually in any philosophy, is the ability to be able to see what's the external and what is previous to it. What is it based upon? Because that's the how you progress out of the material world. How it was manifest, you reverse that, and then that's how you unmanifest it. Does that make sense? So if you identify with the nose, and then I'm smelling, then, you know, if I identify with the body, that means we'll identify the but when we smell with the nose, I'm smelling. But if we understand the subtler principle, then the senses themselves are in contact with the sense objects and all that, so it's higher point positions of energy are at work. And so, therefore, it's not actually myself who is smelling. Right? So then here, then they can just go, therefore, I can give that up, and then they end it there. And that's as far as they take this Brahman level of understanding. But we'll take it further because we understand is it's not actually us smelling, it's the Lord smelling, because He is the one with the senses. And then He expands those unlimitedly as the Virat Roop, and so therefore everybody has a nose. Right? Like that. And so the smelling is actually because He's smelling. Because He smells, we're able to smell. So then explains that. So then you could just say that, yes, so if I stop smelling, then, you know, we merge back in anyway. Same process. But for the Vaishnavas, then, if it's Him that's originally smelling and I'm using the same sense of smell, then my use of my sense of smell should be in line with the Supreme Lord's sense of smell. Does that make sense? So that then brings it to the transcendental platform, brings it up from the Brahman to the Paramatma, therefore the activities you're doing, and then brings it to the Bhagavan platform that you're trying to smell in connection to please Krishna. Rather than this is the process. This is the energies at work, that's the Brahman level. It is controlled by the Supreme Lord, you know, through His energies, that's the Paramatma level. But when I do it to please the Lord, that's the Bhagavan level. You understand? So they're only interested in the Brahman. So they don't actually, aren't interested in the Para-Brahman aspect. So they're even within Brahman only seeing a portion of it. Right? So these first three are all dealing just with the Brahman level, but they're just taking smaller portions of it. They're not actually going very deep into it. What they do get involved in, they take it very elaborately, but the broadness of their understanding is not there. They have a lot of depth, but not much broadness. Does this make sense? Likewise, the mouth, arms, legs, and the organs of excretion and reproduction correspond to the five senses of action. Verbalization, apprehension, locomotion, excretion, and procreation. These physical organs are not the senses. Rather, they give power. They are given power by the senses. Right? They're the medium for the senses. While the five cognitive senses and five senses of action are called external, the mind is master of all the external senses, and without its direction and guidance, they could not function. The mind is a very subtle sense indeed, but it also has many aspects, and it therefore comes into contact with several senses at the same time. According to Shankya philosophy, the mind is neither atomic nor eternal, but it is rather a product of prakriti, and is therefore subject to origin and dissolution. The cognitive senses contact their objects and supply their experiences to the mind, which then interprets the data as desirable or undesirable perceptions. In turn, ahankara attaches itself to the objects of perception, identifying itself with the desirable ones and resenting the undesirable ones. The intellect then decides how to deal with those external objects. Right? So that whole process there is the same as what we will then describe. Water bugs, so they have really spikies on their feet. You can't get rid of them. Okay, so here we see is that some are taking it because the mind is coming from goodness and it's in control of all the senses, right? The action, senses of action and of knowledge. therefore they're categorized in the mode of goodness also, because their only functioning is coming from the mind. So then in practicality you can say they're functioning because of the mode of goodness of the mind. Like that, on that side. But technically speaking, they're actually manifestations of the mode of passion. But the mind is in control of that. You know, just as the mind will control the intelligence. And then the intellect then decides how to deal with those external objects. The intellect doesn't work on its own. It also works with the mind. So the mind is deciding what to intellectualize on. Therefore, you can say the intellect is then, okay, so of these things, this is the best. But it doesn't actually the one that affects it. Right? The mind may turn to the intelligence, okay, I have these, what are my options? The intelligence says these three are your options. So then what are the best of the options? So depending upon your identity, your ego and what it is you're therefore identify with, it will look at these three options and choose which one is the best. Right? So in that way you can say it's deciding, but it's not the one that actually affects it, that's the mind. Right? Because action happens in the mode of goodness. Passion is the future, right? Ignorance is the past. So the intelligence to say, well, this is what you could do, which means future. But the mind actually does it with the senses. So that's a goodness. So that's in the present. Does that make sense? Like that. So in this way, then you can, you know, divide this way, that way, depending upon your particular perspective on whether you're looking at just the mechanics of where it is, or you're actually looking at the practicalness of what it is. So that's what's so nice in the Vaishnava philosophy. It looks at both of them. It can see both, because you have the tattva and you have the rasa. So both of them, they both work together, so you can get both aspects. That's why many times you get something that seems contradictory, but it's not. It's a matter of what is the perspective. You've changed the perspective. So it's all under the control of the mind, therefore you can call it the mind, and that can include the senses, sense objects, you know, and all these different things. So you can just have the mind, you know, and that includes 16, you know, items there. Does that make sense? So some will identify it like that because it works that way. It's practically how it works. Does that make sense? The five ton matras of sound, touch, color, taste, and smell are the subtle counterparts to the gross elements. They can be inferred but not perceived. They evolve after the 10 senses have come into being, and they are the cause of the five gross elements, which are derived in a gradual step-by-step process. First to evolve is the ton matra, that is the essence of sound, shabda, from which in turn ether, akash, the space element, is derived. Right. Does that make sense? So this is, Bhagavatam explains like this also, it's the same. So you can see it's basically all what they've explained is the same, it's just a matter of where they're putting the mind and senses. That's all, that's the only difference of opinion, really, there. So in practice, it's controlled by the mind. In technical, it works under rajas, because it's the intelligence that allows the senses to perform their mechanical function. Right? Because the sense means it's distinguishing between one thing and another. You know, smooth and rough, or, you know, hard and soft, or hot and cold. So that requires intelligence to tell the difference. So the sense works by intelligence to do that. But that it is touching something in specific, and then having, that's the mind, and then digesting the information that's come, is that something that you're interested in or not? That's the mind. You understand? So in this way, you can say the mind is the lord of the senses. Same time, you can say the intelligence is the lord of the senses. Therefore, Aniruddha is said to be the master of the senses, and Prajumna is said to be the master of the senses. Right, because both of it works together, and the point is from Aniruddha is coming from Prajumna. So when there's that interest and desire, then it becomes attachment. So therefore, from attachment you work. So the senses are working because you've come from Prayojana to Abhideya. Right, then you're going to work. Otherwise, you're not going to work. How will you work? Right? If you don't want it, why would you work? So that means this anirudha is controlling it. But the excitement for that, the basis of it, and the intelligence on how you're going to work with it is going to come from Prajumna. Right? Based on whatever your principles are, should be in Shankarshan, should be the Vedic literature. Right? But if your if that element of Shankarshan is not filled with the Vedic authority, then you're going to make up your own. Right? And so then your whole process may be absolutely totally wrong. Because Shankarshan is the basis of this process. From Shankarshan comes Prajumna, then Anirudha. So if Shankarshan is not correct, Prajumna and Anirudha won't be correct either, those positions. Right? So when you understand things according to Shastra, according to Parampara, then what you desire, you know, and therefore what you become attached to, that you work for, it has a basis to actually be performed properly, so that the end result actually is to please the Lord. Right? And then from Anirudha, once it's gained, it moves again back to Prajumna. Right? So that connection is there. So we see that there's a connection between the two of them. There's a distinction, but there's a connection. Yes.
Mark, this statement, the space element contains the quality of sound which is perceived by the ear. There seems to be some difference between this definition of sound and what is considered sound in modern terms, you know, being a movement of air rather than something that's propagated in the ether.
It's a movement of air, but everything gross is based on something subtle. So the subtle element of sound, you know, will then move the ether, which will move the air. And then that will fall upon, in this case, then the ear is made out of earth. But the thing is then that will, you know, does that make sense? So, in other words, the subtle is pushing on the next element, which pushes on the next. Like movement is actually coming from air. But the air element pushes on the fire, and the fire pushes on the earth. So you have some interest which pushes on the life force in the body, the life airs, which then pushes on fire, right? Which then makes, you know, what we call the nerves, this and that, which then comes to the muscle, which is the grosser element, and then there's the movement. But it actually starts at a higher level. So that's the thing, is that the gross, you can understand the mechanics of the gross, but they can't understand what's beyond that. That's the difficulty. Therefore, sometimes things work and they don't understand why. They just know it's there.
So for chanting in one's mind.
Yes.
The sound subtle.
Yes, because there you're dealing with, you know, farther down. Because nod is unperceivable. So you do have the primordial sound. At the same time, as it can be manifest within the mind. So you have all these levels of subtlety. So the point is that we don't have to get, you know, mystical to appreciate subtlety. Our whole philosophy, our whole culture, everything's subtle. So there's no need of going outside of it for something more, you know, look for something hidden. No, what's there is already so hidden we can't see it. What we're looking for is, okay, behind this pillar there's another pillar, you know, like that. But you should be looking in that pillar, you know, where's the masculine feminine principle, you know, so therefore where's Narayan and Lakshmi in that, you know, and then how is Paramatma involved in that, and how does that get back to Bhagavan? That's the hidden principle, that's Rahasya, you know. But otherwise this pillar and behind that's another pillar, that's not so Rahasya. It's just that you'd need to move your head over a bit, then you can see it. You know, because all these hidden mystical things are unfortunately always so gross. You know, like that. Is that okay? Okay. Okay, so on the same line. Therefore, the space element contains the quality of sound, which is perceived by the ear. The air element is the derivation of the essence of touch. Sparsha Tanmatra, which combines with that of sound. Therefore, the air element contains the attributes of sound and touch, although touch is the special quality of air and is sensed by the skin. The fire element is derived from the sense of color, Rupa Tanmatra. It combines the qualities of sound, touch, and color, and its special property is sight, which is sensed by the eyes. The water element is derived from the essence of taste, Rasa Tanmatra. All three preceding qualities, sound, touch, color, are found in it, as well as its special quality, taste, which is sensed by the tongue. The essence of smell, Gandha Tanmatra, produces the earth element, whose special property is odor, which is sensed by the nostrils. This grossest element contains all of the four previous qualities. In other words, as each comes down, each as it comes, it has the qualities of the last. Right? So you have sound. So in touch, then you have that sense and sound also, because touching things creates sound and these kind of things. Then form, then it has these others within it, right? Sound, so because like a fire is form, it's coming from fire, that's where it comes. It makes sound, right? Then you can sense it like that. Then water, you have taste. Once that comes in, then you have these others. Then earth has everything. So that's how it's set. So that way, each one gradually comes down and gets grosser and grosser. Okay. Thus, the course of evolution takes place in 24 stages. It starts from the root cause, Prakriti, and it ends with the earth element, the grossest manifestation. This process is broken down into two major categories: the development of Prakriti as Buddhi, Ahankara, and the 11 senses, and the evolution of the 5 subtle elements and 5 gross elements. So this is how then they break it, that, you know, for the map, why some would connect them all together. So the mind, the knowledge acquiring senses, and the active senses, they're all in one process. And then the gross elements and the tanmatras are in another, right, like that. So then this way you get here is 11 and 10, so 21, and then the 3 modes of nature. So that makes you 24. Right. So does that make sense? Like that. Okay, so then we'll continue tomorrow again. Get a few more pages of that, and then some more pages of that. Again, more pages. Okay. Another 10 pages of that. Or actually, we should say this, because it's from this material. That would mean it's spiritual. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Premanandi ki.